Well, the meeting of the House file, but I can never remember your numbers. Ours was so easy, 10:30, 9:34, and it's Senate file 10:30. Conference committee is called to order. We've had a little delay that Representative Garofalo will admit to causing, but we felt it was important.
Well, Madam Chair, I love my wife so much that we extend Mother's Day into Monday morning. No, I didn't mean it that way. No. No, and wait, no. And it just dawned on me, we're on TV, aren't we? Oh, no. Oh, all right. The committee is adjourned. We are out.
Oh, you love the attention, don't.
That might be the worst thing I've ever said on this cover. Oh, no.
No, it isn't.
Oh my goodness.
Well, while we're at the piling on of the Representative Garofalo, anybody else want to add anything? Welcome back. I hope you've had a good weekend, and it's a rainy day, so we don't have to feel bad that we're missing good weather somewhere else. So we are going to go through some sort of odds and ends that we haven't discussed that we may want to consider further, and then the staff has been doing some fiscal work, and we've worked through trying to deal with and reconcile with some of the major issues between House and Senate, and we will be coming back after session, probably about 2:30, and see how far we can get in seeing what's being proposed and in general agreement on, and then we'll go from there. A few of the things that are, there's some House and some Senate provisions, and if you want to follow either in your summary or your regular bill, the House has a length of school year provision in Article 1, Section 3. And Ms. Larson, I think you're probably in a position to walk through some of this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The language is in R5 of Article 1.
Ms. Larson, your voice is lowered.
Yes. Strom, I'm sorry about that.
Quite all right. So on page R5, on the left side of the page in Article 1 is the length for the, or is the language in Section 3 for the length of the school year. This provision would reinstate a minimum length of the school year and would set that as an hours of instruction by grade level, requiring 425 hours for kindergarten students, 935 hours for elementary students, and 1,020 hours of instruction for students in 7th through 12th grade.
Okay, is there any discussion on that that provision?
What page in Section 3, please? Excuse me, R5. R5. Thank you very much.
I'm having difficulty finding. Oh, here we go. It's on R3. I think this was an effort that was before us in the last biennium, too, and not acted upon. This was a House provision, and I don't believe we rediscussed that at all this year, but do you have any of our Senate conferees have any questions of House members regarding this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, for those of us who don't visualize in hours, can you tell me how many days that would be? Or how it compares to the hours we have now?
Madam Chair, Senator Wolf, in terms of the history of this provision, used to be that the State Board of Education had hours of instruction depending on the age level of the child, and then the state had a days requirement of 170 days. And this essentially would match that 170 days with a six-hour a high school, and I believe 5.5 for elementary, and the kindergarten is two or 5 for elementary and 2.5 for the kindergarten per day. So it'd be essentially a half day kindergarten requirement of 2.5 hours. And then it would line up with the old state board rule for the 170 days with those hours that the state board had in place.
Senator Bonhoeff?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for calling on me. I appreciate it. I just wanted to point out that we had that speaker on Thursday, was it? Dr. Vanderard?
Vanderard.
Yep, and he talked about the future of education and how as we use the digital learning potential to alter the way we do education, that one of the first policies that we would have to come to grips with is this notion of hours and seat time, and because if there's going to be components, so I'm not advocating against this, I'm just pointing to the inconsistency of putting into law another strict hours provision, when perhaps if we are going to move forward with this kind of digital reform in the teaching and learning area, this flies in the face of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I enjoyed that presentation as well, and look forward to the day when we can do more of the digital learning and get away with seat time altogether and look at competency-based things. However, I do think this is a step in the right direction. There's at least some consistency here. Currently, all school districts have different numbers of days they're required to have because of the way the current law states that they have to have at least as many as they had in 1996 and 97. And some school districts, like the Rochester School District, were adopting what at that time was going to be a longer day. And then when the funding didn't exactly work out to fund those longer days, there's certain school districts that now have longer school calendars than the rest of the state. And they're that way forever with this current language. So I think the language we have here, which is adopt some consistency so that all school districts have the same requirement for length of school year, is good. Only this way it's measured in hours. And I like the fact that because it's measured in hours instead of days, I think it gives school districts some additional flexibility.
Okay. Does anybody know what the range that our current law is in terms of days?
Madam Chair, we'd be happy to bring down a list. There's a fairly substantial range. There's some districts that are under 170 days, and there are others that are at 175, 178. So there's a real range, and as Senator Nelson says, that's because when the repeal happened, districts were frozen in at whatever calendar they had in place for the 96-97 school year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any further questions or discussions or defense on the House side, or if you'd like to bring up on that subject?
Well, Madam Chair, I would just, as I'm going to probably be a little bit more quiet than normal given my opening comments today. Madam Chair, I think that when you take a look at education funding in this state, state funding provides the vast majority of funding, and we want to make sure that we're getting a good value for those dollars and making sure that we're seeing more instruction, more learning. Senator Bonhoeff makes an excellent point as we move forward in the 21st century. But at this, right now, the way that most of our kids are learning, we want to make sure we're getting value for that. They're not getting shortchanged. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Then Article 1, Section 12, including charter schools with other public schools.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's two sections here. This one on Section 12 starts on the top of, or the bottom of page R10 and finishes up on page R11. What this section does is one of two sections that would include the permanent school fund payments for charter schools. Currently, that money is distributed to school districts only because of a requirement in the state constitution that says the money must be distributed among school districts. And what this section does is says that charter schools are a type of school district in Minnesota and would thus be eligible for the permanent school fund money. And then there's a second section that accompanies this that would distribute the permanent school fund money on the basis of students served instead of on the current statutory formula, which is resident students.
Okay, thank you. Now, I have a different page. I don't know if I have an old copy of your bill, but I have Article 1, Section 12 on R8. that just adds charter along with common, independent, and special districts. And then the commissioner assigns a number, or is there a revision? Is that the same language?
Madam Chair, that's the same language.
Okay, so it's just,
yeah.
There's something else that shifted the page.
Madam Chair, I believe I may be creating the confusion by working off the side-by-side articles, and those page numbers aren't aligning
with the bill.
The bill,
okay.
Yep.
All right, so that there's no change in that?
No change, yep.
Okay, thank you. So any questions about that item?
And Madam Chair?
I think there had been discussion earlier that of the House effort and to assure that the permanent school funds applied to all students, including charter school students, not just the regular.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
This reinforces that by the changing it in the definition.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, back in, I believe, at the end of 2000, so the 2006 session, I believe Representative Dietrich in the House, and don't recall who the Senate offer were successful in eliminating that general education offset that used to be in statute. And at that time, we did not address the matter of which public school students are. But I think that the intent clearly is that all public school students should be benefiting from that.
Okay, then Article 1, Section 22. Which relates to the uses of total operating capital revenue. And there we do have some differences. We did approve in the Senate for leasing vehicles, and the House has, I believe, added also for costs directly associated with closing a school facility. So am I taking words out of your mouth, Mr. Strom, or can you?
Madam Chair, that's correct, yes.
Okay. Are there any questions or in defense of that? I think the thinking on the Senate side was that there are other sources of resources for closing school facilities rather than using this source. That may be why we didn't, I think we had some discussion of it, but did not include that. Yeah. Is there any further discussion on that topic by members or staff?
And Madam Chair, I think
Representative Rothman.
On the House side, with regards to the cost directly associated with closing a school facility and those moving and storage costs, is that, and Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow can correct me, but that when a school is opening, my understanding is that they are allowed to use those operating capitals dollars in that situation with regards to some of the items of a new facility. I think that's where the origination of that came from. This was in the House of Representatives, a bill by Representative Simon from St. Louis Park, and in with regards to a school closing in his area. That was our mindset on that.
And I think on the Senate side, in that case, did we not allow, I think the Senate had a fund transfer allowing for that. And so you're putting it... You're taking it out of just a use of the operating capital fund. Any correction? Senator Vonoff is agreeing with me, which is nice to have happen. any other discussion on either side on that one? Okay. Then moving to a few that are on the Senate side, but not the House. The full-service school zones. This was Senator Harrington's bill, and I believe Section 18. It was Article 2, Section 17 and 18 were provisions in his bill. Henry, would you want to explain that?
And Madam Chair, members in the... side-by-side language, it's on page R50. So then, as Senator Olson said, section 17 and 18. 17 is a description of what allowing a board to establish a full-service school zone. And it is established for a school that's located in an area with higher than average crime or other social economic challenges and the school needs to provide education, health or human services, or other parental support that is part of a collaboration of other agencies. And then that, then R18 includes that transportation or that full service school zone in the definitions for transportation. And then, Madam Chair, if you're looking at the bill sections on page 40.
Yes, thank you. Okay, are there any questions or discussion? The House is dealing, you do have this provision somewhere. Representative Erickson, you want to?
Madam Chair, we have it in the policy reform bill. And I have lying in front of me an amendment. Maybe you want Ms. Larson to speak to that. I think we need some cleanup language.
So
in this provision, and it'll be in the 1381 as well.
So this would change the Senate language to be consistent with what the House language is in the that you have in a policy bill.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Maybe Ms. Larson.
Ms. Larson,
explain.
Well, Madam Chair, members, Representative Erickson is correct. The proposals are the same in both the Senate and bill that's before you, as well as in Representative Erickson's policy bill. The only difference is some technical kinds of cleanup that are in 1381 and not in here. I believe this was the bill as it was introduced. But that's there is no substantive difference.
So, Ms. Larson, they're just what's the nature? Just technical or wording or grammatical or okay. Okay. So the question is, we'll make a decision whether to include it in this bill or alternative pathways here. Okay. Section 2, Article 19, which is dealing with allowing 9th and 10th grade students to enroll in college in the school classes.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, it's on page R55, if you're looking at the side-by-side language, or page 43 in the Senate file. And that, as Senator Olson explained it accurately, that it's allowing 9th or 10th graders to enroll in college in the school courses after all the 11th and 12th grade students have applied and additional students are necessary in order to offer the course. And there's a couple sections that allow that to do that, but the gist of it is in Section 19. But then 20 is allowing for the dissemination of information to kids in grades 8 and 9. And then Section 21 is the language limiting the participation of a student, just going back now to grade 9 instead of starting at grade 11, and how many credits or academic years they can enroll in those type of courses.
And this was just for college in the schools. It wasn't post-secondary enrollment options or those types of things, because I think the university has some requirements. Our higher ed system has some requirements, but this essentially can be augmenting gifted and talented, keeping kids challenged if there's space available and if there's interest there. So do you have House members have any questions on that, or no? Okay. Then the other one that we have here that qualified as the miscellaneous that we may want to consider is in Article 4, Section 3, relating to capital project levy referendum. Thank you.
that was changing language that's similar to operating, renewal of operating referendum, when an additional capital referendum is coming up and it does not exceed the value of the one that is would be sunsetting, that they're asking for a, either continuation or based on a new project, that if it is the same, it would that they're voting for an existing project referendum that is scheduled to renew that, which is scheduled to expire. Rather than the statement that has been in law, which is not repealed, it is still there for other ones, that this may be in addition to your taxes, your property taxes.
And, Madam Chair, my understanding is this is pretty much conforming with the language we have on operating limits that are being renewed. Yeah. So
there was one other, I think, area close to this, and I don't know if we've had discussion on that. Senator Limmer, maybe our staff, Senator Limmer had worked with the department staff on kind of updating. I don't know that it changes authority so much as it streamlines the application process for an approval process for the use of health and safety revenue, and that is in Article 4, and I believe it begins with Section 2. That is,
yep. Madam Chair, members, in the side-by-side, it's on page R1, Section 2, and in the Senate language, it's on page 61.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I don't know if you did any consideration of that. It was meant to streamline. We were, you know, working on trying to do things that are lightening the load and, you know, making things flow smoother for our school districts in through these times. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have included this in 1381, the omnibus policy reform bill for the House.
In the, pretty much the same form.
Yes.
Are you okay with that? Kind of
yes.
Thing?
If we are.
If there is there any discussion on these, or would you, if you're comfortable with them, we could have. And if we have enough people on each side that are in agreement, we could move these and put them in the bill.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, I think we're happy to move. I don't know if would you like me to move each individual section for.
Well,
I
think we can move the Senate provisions and move the House provisions, unless there's something that stands out. If there's.
Yeah,
Madam Chair, on this last provision, Ms. Larson is reminding me that.
I'm not including that health and safety. Oh. That was kind of an add-on.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair.
For clarification. The ones that kind of ending with that capital project levy language was, and from the Senate side, it would be the, the Senate side, we'd have to determine there's, if we want the House language for the ones where they're different. The others, they're not in the in that provision. So the first three would be your House positions if you wish to offer those. If you were in agreement with having the capital account covering the school closing, which was different from our provision. And the other would be the inclusion of the full service for the Senate, the full service school zones, and the enrollment of ninth and tenth graders in college and the school classrooms when there's space available, and then the that language on the capital levy. So there's about three main provisions in each on each side. Representative yeah. Deckey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to make sure on the capital levy referendum language, is that all of...
Can I use your mic?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I apologize. Madam Chair, I wanted to just make sure on the capital project referendum language on the side-by-sides, does this include all of subsection 3 on the Senate side? Is that what we're voting on that? I just wanted to make that clear.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
It's on the side-by-side. It's in... it would be R7 is the page that I'm referring to.
What is the topic?
Capital Project Levy Referendum. I just
it's section three.
It's regarding the ballot question, yes, too, and I wanted to make sure that that was included in what we are voting on here. If it's not, then if we're going to vote on it separately, that would be fine. But I wanted to make sure that your section three or subsection three, I think that's what you were asking us to look at.
Yes.
On the changes, and it includes the ballot language.
Yes.
Is that correct? Thank you very much.
Yes. So is there someone that would, I don't know if I can move as a chair. Can I move the Senate provisions?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, might I just ask you a question before we move those provisions? Mm-hmm. I do have an amendment for something in Article 1 regarding the early graduation scholarships. Well, would that be at a better time?
I
is there a better time for that?
I think we deal with these two, and then we'll see what we...
Thank you.
If we've got some time, we can get
yeah.
that up and discuss it.
Okay, so.
Well, I was asking anybody to come. Oh, the health and safety.
Do you want me to start with these three? I'll move these three provisions, and then. Okay.
So, Miss Larson. Oh, you. What happened to her? Okay, but okay. that's on a provision. Oh, okay. go ahead and finish it. Go ahead and finish, and we can move on what we've got because that is not part of it. So I would move the Senate positions on Article 2, Section 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and Article 4, Section 3. That's those three positions. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and the passage of these into our conference committee report is adopted. And Representative Ruffalo.
Madam Chair, I would move Article 1. I wrote in my notes here, but the three sections, Article 1, Section 3.
12 and 22.
Article 1, Section 3, Section 12, and Section 22.
Representative Ruffalo has moved those sections. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and is adopted. Ms. Larson, now I apologize for.
Madam Chair, members, the House received from the Senate fiscal staff.
Can you move it over just a little bit? Thank you.
The House received from the Senate fiscal staff an amendment to that health and safety provision that's in Article 4, Section 2 of the Senate file. And it didn't engross quite right. So Valerie Dosland came because she was involved in these discussions, and we worked through it, and we made it engross. But what I don't know is whether, number one, that was intended, number two, the change proposed by the Senate fiscal analyst is reflected in here, and if it is, in which version it is. Whether the version the House received or the version the House changed.
So, Ms. Larson, I don't know that I can answer that. Is there someone here who can?
Madam Chair, if we had a moment or so, sure, we could compare what's in here to what is in Article 4 of House File 1381, and we would know exactly how they compare.
Okay, thank you. Why don't you do that? And I think Senator Nelson had raised an issue about another one that we don't have on the table now, but I believe it was one that we were totally sames on the grad.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I was thinking about our Early Graduation Achievement Scholarship Program. That's on page R5. It's in both bills, and I certainly support that, but I think there might be just a little additional good government piece that needs to be included here. I believe I have an amendment prepared for that. I'll just tell you exactly what the genesis
tell me
was.
Where this is again?
It's on page R5 in the side by side. It's Article 1.
Which article?
Okay. Article 1.
Okay. So
section 5.
House or Senate language?
I'm in the Senate language. Actually, they're the same. And it's about the Early Graduation Achievement Scholarship Program. Does everybody's there? My thought was that we might want, I think we should make sure that the timing about when the student turns in the form to the commissioner regarding, it's in subdivision 5, which happens to be on page R6. It has to do about when they turn in their form, and currently the language says that the form they turn into the commissioner must verify enrollment and tuition charges, which is a great thing. However, I think we need to put something in there regarding the timing of that, because it's quite possible, as you might remember from your college days or those of your children, that students can be enrolled up until a certain date. I think it's called the last day to drop, at which there's no penalty. And so, quite frankly, it's possible. I wouldn't think this would happen with students who are motivated enough to graduate early from high school, but it's possible in the current language that we could have a student who would graduate early, apply for the scholarship, turn in their college admissions and their tuition charges for the hours they've signed up for, and receive that scholarship check, and yet drop out before the last drop date. And so I just think it's important that we have some language in there that the actual form that the student submits to the commissioner is after the last drop date. So we know that that student has enrolled and has signed up for those courses and will not be dropping without a penalty. So do we have the amendment here?
Madam Chair and members, it's just done orally. I don't it's not typed up, but the language I was thinking of adding would be after on page R5 at 5.24 after commissioner, insert comma after the higher education institution's final date for withdrawal from school comma.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greffel.
And thank you, and Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I appreciate you identifying what could be a potential issue. I just think we want to make sure that go back to my days and financial aid and when is tuition due and the purpose of, we want to make sure that students, I guess we're trying to incentivize students here. Does the timing on that work out okay, Senator Nelson, or what's your recollection
of
college?
Well, that's why the language has to be more broad than just maybe a specific date, because every college has a different last day to drop. And I can't recall if it's 30 days after the start of, or if it's maybe, sometimes it's 6 weeks after the start of the semester. A student can drop a class and be reimbursed for tuition, not have it count on their transcript. And
Senator Nelson, do they not also have to have a fee statement that they have paid their tuition earlier? There's some balance there that if they are counting on the scholarship to be able to do that, at least as they begin, this could be at cross purposes to the whole thing.
Madam Chair?
I don't know. If they drop, then do they, and they've paid the fees, would they get that back?
There's some timing issues here in terms of how the institutions run, and I don't know the answer to that. Does anybody here know?
I don't know the answer to that, Madam Chair, but aren't scholarships usually paid directly to the institution?
This is paid to the student.
It specifically states?
Yes.
Yes. Could that be changed so that the money goes to the institution rather than the individual? And then we don't have to, because I share Senator Nelson's concern, but then we wouldn't have this issue of dates and timing and having the money in hand to pay the tuition and all of that, and yet we could assure what I believe is your objective, which is we don't want students taking this money and it's just a
bonus. Not going to school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is there any discussion? Maybe we may not be ready to act until we get a few more questions answered, but I think to have some reflection on this.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea, Senator.
Okay, I think let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, is there... I think that reaches the end of our list for now, and I believe we have session at 10:30. I don't know what the House's schedule is for today, but we were looking at tentatively returning at 2:30. 2:30 today.
Okay.
So we would recess.
One second. What time? Just talking to the mic, Aaron. It's okay. What?
We have a session at 3.
Okay. We have a session at 3. So we'll probably caucus.
Mr. Chair, we have caucus at 2:30.
2:30.
So
okay.
We would, Representative Garofalo, how long do you expect your?
You know, why don't, Madam Chair, we'll confer with staff and with House leadership, and we'll get back to you on that so we can allow you ample time to make an announcement.
And so it will not be before 2:30 or...
And, Madam Chair, we have caucus at 4:30, so I don't know what the plan is for how long it's going to go, but I just want you to know.
We're aligned perfectly.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe 6 o'clock tonight is more realistic.
That's the call of the chair when our both sides are available.
Super.
Okay. Thank you very much. So the committee is recessed.